All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Friday, March 2nd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. As always, head on over to the site for a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. That's DFSR.com/NBA to get yourself started. We're also streaming live on Twitch today. We'll be doing that for each of our podcasts going forward. James, what's the give out that link because I did not do my due diligence and write that link down. It's Twitch. It's twitch.tv. What's the link for Twitch?
twitch.tv/DFSR podcasts. twitch.tv/DFSR podcasts.
And we'll put that in the show notes as well. So that's something we'll have going up there where you can just stare at our ugly mugs and hopefully don't make too many mistakes. Usually James makes the mistakes in the podcast and I have to go out and edit those.
That's true. So I will seem a lot stupider if you watch the video live, but that's okay. I'm a humble man, Doug, if nothing else, and understand that, hey, I've got a lot of work to do, and that's why I've kind of taken you on as a mentor.
All right, so we're going to talk a full Friday in the NBA. There's usually we get about 10 to 12 games. Today there's only 9, so not as many things to wade through as your typical Friday in the association. We'll go through some of the matchups here. It's an interesting, if not exciting, slate at first glance is kind of how I look at it. You know, we're coming off a day yesterday. So yesterday I posted an article that I called an unscientific guide to tanking teams, because we spend so much time on the podcast talking about these teams that tank and just how that you deal with them. And, you know, in thinking about it, I really kind of just thought not all teams are created equal in this tanking process. Like, some are so bad that they can just kind of do whatever. Some are complete messes beyond just anything we've ever seen before, really. And so I kind of went through the 6 or 7 teams and gave them grades. And it was really funny because I gave a grade. So, obviously I did, your standard A through F scoring or grading. And so gave the Kings a clear F. I mean, they've been the worst. And I used an example from the other day where they gave Zach Randolph a DNP CD during the game. And then that still applies. Like, the article got posted yesterday and it still applies to what happened yesterday. Like, I went in the article, I said the other night.
Right.
And I just wrote the other night instead of Tuesday night or whatever happened that time. It's just going to be correct forever, it seems like. And, it's funny because when you watch Twitter go off, and even, people that kind of are really robust in injury reporting news, like Fantasy Labs is very good, obviously, about, injury reporting and just kind of coordinating the entire injury reporting effort. And even they are kind of like throwing up their hands at the Kings and like, this is just the new normal. They're the worst reported team, injury reporting team ever. They just do these random things. So anyway, go check that out on the site, kind of wade through each different team. We'll kind of nod to them also on the podcast here, because again, like, they're not all the same. There are some tanking teams that I think we can sort of trust for DFS purposes.
Sure. I mean, we played two of them the other night, right? We stacked Phoenix and Memphis, and those are two of the tanking teams, and that worked out splendidly. Every player that you could have played from that game was better than the next. So
right. And they get in my very, very thought out and vetted grading process. I gave the Suns a B+ and I gave the Memphis a B. Like, I felt that they were, the new look Suns are really the ones that we can talk about going forward later on in this league. Actually, and they both play today, so we can kind of talk about them. And by the way, it's not even just these tanking teams that are the issue. There's other teams in the NBA that have sort of similar issues. We saw it last night with Miami as well. They are playing shorthanded. They roll Olynyk into the starting lineup, and they play a close game against the Lakers, and they end up rolling Olynyk and Whiteside a combined 30 minutes, right? And so it's not...
Yeah, they just do whatever they want.
Right. So and I kind of said that in the chat ahead of time. I was like, watch out for Miami, because Spoelstra, as much as any other coach really in the league, will play rotations. And these guys, I think you can pretty much trust them. And there are some times when you just can't, because he sees something he likes or doesn't like and he switches it up. And now all of a sudden those guys get completely burned. So it's not just tanking teams that do this. There are other teams that are untrustworthy as well. All right, let's get into some of these games here. Like I said, interesting, if not all overly exciting slate. 7:00, Detroit goes into Orlando. Detroit is 2.5 favorite. And your call about this is the Chiefs, we're going to see Blake Griffin all year at 7,600. Does not come to fruition. Do you want to re-amend that? Because now he's 7,400 on FanDuel after another disappointing performance. Where do we stand here with Blake? There's going to be a price at which we're going to want to play him, right? Because there's just always a price. If he was $100, we wouldn't play him in every lineup, correct, right? And if he was $10,000, we would never play him. So there's somewhere along the spectrum and scale at which Blake Griffin is a deal. You said 76 was the best deal that we're going to see on him all year. Are you amending that to now just say 7,400 is the best deal we're going to see, and just we're going to keep saying that over and over and over again until it actually begins.
No, I think 76. I think 76 was the best deal that we're going to see all season. I'm going to stick with my guns on that one. I'm kind of like a politician that way. I don't really like to, kind of be a flip flopper there, Doug. So I will stand by my word. Well, let's slow down for one quick second on that, because Griffin played 26 minutes, but he was awesome. He scored a fantasy point per minute in that time. So if he's going to play his normal minutes, he's too cheap on this price. So I am happy to play Blake Griffin again, my friends. Great matchup with Orlando. I'm going to roll him out there, if possible, every possible lineup. Get ready to say what's up in the chat tonight. You know, you can help me dab all over everyone else who's scared to play Blake Griffin, because I think he's just a good play. I don't know what to tell you. 7,400, too cheap, unless you expect him to play 25 minutes a game, in which case that's too expensive, right? But I think the true rotation here is something like 35 minutes. And on that price, I'm going to get a great value on this. He went 8, 9, and 7 in 25 minutes. That's excellent.
Oh, I think he's a good play. I'm mostly just giving you a hard time about the price and dropping. I think that he is, again, when you factor in the Detroit's last three games have been in the blowout territory. So we've seen weird minutes out of right. Some of the starters. Ish Smith has been like that too. We saw what the plan is when they can actually stick in when the game stays close. The other one of those games was a blowout victory. So, when the game stays close, we kind of can get a sense that 35 minutes for Blake is going to be the thing. And that, yes, I agree with you that this is just simply too cheap. If you run lineups on the site right now, on at least on FanDuel for our purposes, he's coming in at 100% of the lineups, and on DraftKings, yeah, he's somewhere like around 75% of the lineups, where he's also 7,400. There's going to be a time to buy low. This is it. Even if he was bad this game for whatever reason and it went down to 7,000, I would just keep doing it again, because yes, the situation for Blake is new, and what we've seen historically is that NBA players just kind of tend to regress to their career mean independent of situation. Maybe some little things.
Well, he's also just not going to be in blowouts every single game. So like, you can get distracted by the blowouts if you'd like, if you're a distractible person. But if you understand that Detroit, on balance, most teams don't play in blowouts every single game unless they're just insanely good or insanely bad. Detroit's actually the square middle. They're not neither insanely good nor insanely bad. So they don't, and they're not like an especially good three-point shooting team either. See, I'm starting to mess up already. But I still think that they're going to come out in the wash eventually. I don't think Blake is especially prone to minutes adjustments either, in the same way that Drummond is. I offered concern about him last game. We saw one of those potential scenarios come through on him. I think I like Drummond in this game too. I think there's actually just plenty of value on the Detroit side. And I think you're getting a really good price, because a lot of people are going to be spooked by what amounts to a little bit of a bad run of variance.
Yeah, no, Drummond too. I think this is a pretty nice way to stack. I think the Detroit side. Ish is a guy's minutes are a little hard to get a handle on, because, you know, we saw him playing low 30s minutes, but then the blowout that didn't happen. But then we've also seen close games where he doesn't completely get there. His price has really been driven down, especially on DraftKings, where I think he's like in the 5,300 on DraftKings, which was, I don't know. It strikes me as a little low, and it also is not a guy that I really get overly excited to play. Orlando, you know, they're one of those tanking teams. Also, I kind of mentioned in the article, their problem is they're getting healthy at just the wrong time. They do not want to win. And right at that time, they get Vucevic and Gordon back into the lineup. The other night, they played a close game, and really none of the starters saw anything more than 31 or 32 minutes. They did close with them, so they were at least intellectually honest about who the players that were supposed to play at the end of the game were, because they did rotate pretty much all five starters back in between the 7-minute mark and the 5-minute mark left in the game, but they still didn't see a ton of minutes. I mean, where do we stand with these guys? For me, it feels like just mostly a minutes concern at this point, and there's a little bit of upside if for some reason one of the guys plays a little bit more, but it doesn't really seem like it's going to be the plan.
Yeah, and it's kind of a rough matchup anyway. Yeah, I love that, bringing their starters back in for the last few minutes of the game. It's kind of like the equivalent of the people who structure their bank deposits to be like just under the threshold that needs to get reported. You know, they're like, we're not tanking. What do you mean? Fournier was out there at the end of the game. Do you see? We're tanking. Come on. Us? No. We always play crazy minutes. Now, I don't trust Orlando at all in this matchup. For mostly because it's also just a bad matchup too. Detroit, bottom 10 team in the league in terms of pace. Kind of middle of the road defense, potentially. Well, it's probably just a neutral move to bring in kind of the new cast since the big trade at the All-Star break. But nonetheless, I'm not going to play Orlando on a 10-game slate against Detroit when they're already playing erratic minutes. I just don't see any point.
Charlotte goes in and plays the Sixers. Sixers coming on the back-to-back here. Big win against the Cavs last night. So we've seen them manage Joel Embiid in the past on back-to-backs, though they have started to get away from that a little bit as they make what really is just a playoff push at this point. That was a really big leverage game for them to beat the Cavs last night in Cleveland, in terms of just overall playoff seeding. At this point in the season, there aren't many, I guess I'm using the word leverage, but there aren't many just very important games for one team to kind of play another and win. But that really, that put them within two games of the loss column of a Cleveland who still, while probably improved, definitely still has its warts. Anyway, big win for.
Now, speaking of eating our hats, you've been pretty high on Cleveland all season. Are you kind of singing a different tune now? It sounds like with the loss against.
What do you mean? How?
Like you've loved Cleveland all season. You talked about how, you know, the defense is better than most people think. How they're going to turn it around at some point soon, and then they showed maybe some chinks in the armor there against Philly.
So are you starting to feel deadline, concerned right? here?
I'm just messing around.
I was going to say, you're confusing the hell out of me because I'm like, I feel like that's not something I've ever said. But then I was like getting to the crazy town. I'm like, did I like say that they were going to be so great? Like, I hated them at the beginning. I like them slightly increased, slightly better at the trade deadline without being like over the moon about what they did. But man, you made me feel like I was living in. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Anyway, so let's talk about the Sixers here. So they're coming the back-to-back. They have managed Embiid's minutes at times, but they seem to be getting away from that practice a little bit. Are we trusting a guy like him in this matchup? Is this, you know, a situation they have? The over-under is, I don't know, middle of the road, 215 with Philly minus -4. Charlotte, not a terrible matchup. What are your thoughts on Embiid? And then we can talk about the Charlotte side. Or, I mean, Embiid and then Philly, you know, as a whole, and then we can talk about Charlotte.
So it's a little tricky for me to get a beat on what the deal is with Embiid in back-to-backs right now, because obviously for most of his career, basically up until the midway point in the season, Embiid was not playing at all on back-to-backs or, you know, on one side of them. And then we've seen them experiment with throwing him out there on back-to-backs so far, but in none of those games, as I was going through, did he play two games in a row where he played that kind of 34-minute rotation that we're used to seeing from him on standalone games. There was a 23 and then a 34. I have a 31 and then a 33. So it looks like sort of the upside to me. And it's, you know, it sounds like it's kind of nitpicky, but is around that 33-minute point. With a guy like Embiid, that really matters. You know, he's such a fantasy point-per-minute beast. I mean, the fact that we consider playing anyone at a 10-7 price at 33 minutes per game, I think says something already. And for me, I just don't know if I'm comfortable rolling him out there. And, you know, a fine matchup with Charlotte. Charlotte's been, you know, they played faster this season. The defense has been kind of same characteristically, not amazing defense that we're used to seeing from them. But nonetheless, I just don't think this is the spot where I would want to stick my neck out and pay 10-7 for a guy who I feel I already kind of need a good reason to pay him at that price.
Yeah, no, I think I agree. We played him last night and I felt fine with it on the front end because I thought that was his best chance to see those 34 minutes, which, like you said, is just so minutes are important.
Yeah, still didn't get there. You know, that's kind of the issue with him at
right.
this price.
And you know, minutes of the crown jewel, basically in DFS NBA, they're not the only thing, but they are the highest correlated stat that you can have for success relative to your own historical Absolutely. Success, right? So it's like, just because you play 30 minutes doesn't mean you're going to get LeBron James's stats, right? It's like 30 minutes compared to whatever you did at 15 minutes is usually.
Yeah, generally speaking, that tends to work. I mean, we see outliers there when, say, you're like Boban Marjanovic. I think if he played 48 minutes a game, he probably wouldn't produce the same way that he does at 12 minutes a game, right? But basically, if you're playing enough minutes to get yourself tired while you're on the court, then I just tend to trust your per minute stats. So whether that's 24 minutes a game or 36, like, I think you can extrapolate it pretty consistently. And or at least that's the best thing you have to go on. I doubt that there's anyone out there who's able to say, oh, well, I can picture, you know, Stanley Johnson when he moves from 15 minutes to 36, there will be precisely this much drop off. Like, I don't really think that's a thing. So in Embiid's case, we've seen basically the same points per minute production, regardless of the number of minutes per game. And it's not enough here.
On the Charlotte side, the injury news that we're waiting probably on here, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is still questionable. Now, we had touted Jeremy Lamb, but then that was on the podcast the other day, and then Lamb ended up not starting. Now, we still thought he was a decent play coming off the bench. He did not get there. He was still it was very chalky play, but did not end up meeting value when they started Trevian Graham. Kidd-Gilchrist is questionable here. I think that if Kidd-Gilchrist were to sit, I think we could probably be off both the guys, both Lamb and Graham. Now, Graham did play around 30 minutes. He's
just trash, unfortunately. Yeah, he does absolutely nothing on a permanent basis. And for the same reason, you like a guy like Lamb, when he gets the starting role, you just can't play Trevion Graham. He played 30 minutes and scored 2 points and had one rebound and a steal. Like, that's an incredible lack of production for that much time spent on an NBA court. Yeah, we wound up playing Josh Jackson over Jeremy Lamb. Situation seemed a little bit more secure with him starting in place of TJ Warren. And I think that's kind of where Lamb sits for me right now, where, like, not that I would necessarily be opposed to playing him again in a similar role. I think he's potentially still a value on high 20s-ish minutes per game. I think Trevion Graham looks like a bubble waiting to burst in terms of the minutes. Like, I just don't know how any coach in good faith could, and who's trying to win could continue to run the guy out there. And I don't think, you know, they don't need him for like defensive purposes in this game necessarily either. So I think you'll see more Lamb in this game than you do Trevion Graham overall.
Yeah, it could be if Kid Gilchrist sits and if they made a start change the starting lineup. So it's like there's a couple of pieces of information we're waiting on here. One guy that is showing up in a lot of lineups right now, I believe, is Kemba Walker. I'm just running it again while I say this. Kemba Walker, right now he's coming in at 7,800 on FanDuel and I think a 200 something like that cheaper. So same price on DraftKings, 7,800 on both. Right now, running lineups, he's coming into 100% of lineups for both sites. Would you feel comfortable with Walker in this situation at this price with like the way Charlotte's kind of been going? Do you feel comfortable as of right now? Like, whenever a guy like this is showing up in all the lineups this early in the day, which people have heard us say this on the podcast before, it usually means like this is not the price point that changes. It's usually things around the lower tier that change because plays only get cheaper as the day goes on. You know, the big money guys, their situation doesn't change. Would you feel comfortable here with Walker and cash in all the lineups? It feels iffy to me, but that's only because I haven't really rostered him that much in the short term.
Yeah, I think we've played him more than most actually over the course of the DFS season, and most people don't play him, I think, rightfully, because his opportunity tends to be somewhat consistent. So it's oftentimes kind of tough to get a value on him. And Charlotte hasn't really suffered from too many injuries that have increased his opportunity. You know, he's already kind of got as much usage as he's going to get probably. And so for that reason, you know, he doesn't see a lot of DFS play. But I think recently there's been this pretty long run now of the whole team playing fewer minutes than they would in close games. Basically, we've got, let's see, five blowouts in a row. And like, we're talking 15 points being the minimum spread in any of those games. And sure, Walker's maximum number of minutes was 34 over that stretch. And, you know, that doesn't sound too inspiring. In spite of that relatively rough stretch, he's still averaging 35 minutes per game. And that includes all the other blowouts that have come and gone over the course of the season as well. And Charlotte actually has played in quite a few of them, especially recently. I think in close games, Walker's true minutes are something like 37, 38 minutes per game. Vegas likes Philly here by 4 points. I think it should be a somewhat of a close game, and I think you'll see the ball in Walker's hands a lot. So I wouldn't go out of my way to get Walker out of the lineup. We saw even in the tough matchup against Boston, his fantasy points per minute production, again, was still excellent. He scored 30 fantasy points in just 24 minutes. So I think if you have him out there for 36, 37 minutes a game, you'll see that good production will follow.
Yep, and I like Howard in this matchup too. I think you can see his minutes, especially if he's tasked with Embiid, tick into the low 30s, and he's typically more of a DraftKings play just because the double-double bonus gets you just that extra little bit of points, and he's always just a little bit cheaper on DraftKings as well. So 7,300 over there, I could see him as a cash game play if you thought specifically, well, one, if Cody Zeller's out again, I think that helps him. And then two, if you think he's going to play, I don't know, 32, 33 minutes in this matchup, then I think Howard strikes me as, at least on DraftKings, as close to a cash game play. Golden State goes in and plays Atlanta. This game has the highest over-under of the day, as is usually the case. Oh, no, it's tied with the Clippers in New York. But it's usually the case for the Warriors in terms of just overall projected points. Golden State is 13-point favorites against an Atlanta team that graded out somewhere like a D on my tanking teams. Their starters don't play any kind of minutes. No one plays more than 30. That's been really a season-long trend. And it hasn't changed as they've shipped off guys like Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova, buying them out. And just you would think that on a real team, that would open up more minutes for the guys they want to play, but they just kind of spread it out further down the crappy river. But Golden State minus 13. Are we just too worried about a blowout here to really think about rostering any of the Warriors guys? Does 13 for me has me putting guys like Curry and Clay and really and Durant, Draymond, who are really the relevant guys, into like the low end of their average minutes? Do you feel like we're on the right trail there, or could you see, I don't know, is there any party that thinks Atlanta can hang in this game?
No, I think it's appropriate to do that. I mean, we saw even in the Washington game, you know, we talked about guys like Drummond where there's a risk that minutes will fall off. The Warriors have multiple risks involved here. The first is obviously minutes. I mean, being favored by 13 points is obviously no joke. That's an incredibly high amount to be favored by. And then the second is that these guys are all kind of priced like public players, right? Like, and by that, I mean players that probably see more play than they would otherwise, just by virtue of the fact that they're on the most exciting team in the NBA. So if you go up and down game logs or just look at season averages, you'll see like this Washington game is a perfect example of this. None of these guys, not a single one of those flashy big name Warrior starters, wind up paying value coming out of the starting lineup, except for Draymond Green. And so, you know, Klay Thompson missed dramatically. Curry was bad. Durant was bad. All of which, had you played them and they got their full minutes against Washington, you still would have been disappointed. And that's because it's kind of tough to know where the production is going to come from on such a balanced team. I think if you also add in the fact that the blowout risk is there, yes, Atlanta is an excellent matchup. I think if you want to kind of pick and choose for your big tournaments, that sounds pretty reasonable to me. But I think if you are projecting 35 plus minutes for these big name guys, you're kind of just, you're going more on the thoughts and prayers department than the actual projection department.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is going to be a game I generally avoid. And again, you can't, in only the shortest of slates can you really roster any Hawks because of the way that they run their rotations. No one plays enough. So this is probably a game for that I'm mostly going to avoid in terms of making lineups. Dallas goes into Chicago. Two tanky teams going here. Now, Dallas was funny because they got fined and then kind of went back. They got fined for being honest about tanking, then sort of went back and like played some of the starters in minutes as maybe an apology or say, oh, look, we're not doing it or whatever they're going to do. They moved Dwight Powell into the starting lineup. He's played a decent amount recently. But it's still, I mean, this matchup is weird. And then we talked about Chicago. Chicago is actually a team I do sort of trust at this point. They've sat out Lopez and Holiday. That's going to continue to be the trend. They've been very early on reporting about when LaVine is going to sit. That's going to be on back-to-back, so that's not going to be the case here. So this is a standalone game for them. But their starters have played pretty much the minutes you would expect. Like LaVine plays low 30s, Chris Dunn right around 30. Nwaba's been playing low 30s, like 34, 33, 34, Markkanen. Are you feeling like if some of these Bulls guys do show up in lineups, and it's not across the board, like it's a kind of a Nwaba here, maybe a Markkanen there. Is this a team you trust in terms of DFS, knowing that they're tanking? And then what are your thoughts just overall in this game?
I think maybe I trust them less than you do. I think that I feel like sometimes it's a siren song on these bad teams when they kind of get lulled into a false sense of security by playing guys consistent minutes for a few games and then simply changing their minds. I think they're certainly more trustworthy than a lot of the tanking teams, just because a lot of the tanking teams can't even point to a track record like that. So, you know, if you're putting them apples to apples up against teams in similar situations like Brooklyn or Sacramento or something, yeah, I certainly like them better than those teams. I don't know that I like them as much as teams that actually have something on the line. Teams that are playing for nothing often act like it, and that's not always the spot I want to be with my DFS investments. That being said, yeah, like Nwaba, I don't know. I think you mentioned Markkanen. I don't think I trust Markkanen potentially quite as much as you do. But Nwaba, I think, looks pretty decent to me. You know, the minutes are there. It's a pretty inexpensive way to get away from a not-so-good-looking position. I think the plan in relatively close games is to play him. And again, Vegas sees this, given that it's a real rock fight between two of the worst teams in the league, as a close game. You know, it's a 1.5-point spread. So if there were a time to picture relatively sane minutes for these guys, I think this would be it. I do think, and I'll chime in on Dwight Powell too, by the way. I think Powell is a good value. I think at 5,600, he can play 26 minutes and still credibly potentially get there. He's done so in two of the last five games. He played 26 minutes or fewer and got there. And he's gotten there in terms of paying value in all but one of his games since, geez, you have to go back, since February started. So this guy's been paying value on 5,600 very, very reliably. And frankly, I think there's only upside built into this price because, if anything, it looks like they're leaning higher on his minutes.
Yeah, 32 minutes, and then the 37-minute game was an overtime game. So he's basically played 32 minutes in the starter's role over the last couple games, and I'm realizing now I was a little bit low on his minutes. So he probably ended up becoming, especially on FanDuel, where you just have – it's just such a – typically such a disaster to have to roster two of these power forward guys. At 5,600, that is a – That strikes me as cheap. So I could see a situation where he's coming in to a decent amount of lineups, and he actually might be right around the same price on DraftKings. And if you think 32 minutes is he's like one of those examples you used in the past where he could not start and we wouldn't be worried about getting totally crushed on it, right? Like, when if he does start and plays the 32, then I think we're looking at some pretty nice upside. If he doesn't start, then you're not completely sunk. And that, like, that's the case with some players. Like, you know, I kind of thought that about the Zebo Scal Labissiere kind of situation last night. I was like, oof, Labissiere is in the lineups. This could go real wrong, right? Like, it could go, there are ways that it can go real wrong. I don't feel that same sense of like impending doom, with Hal. Next game on the list, Denver goes in and plays Memphis. Denver -6.5 favorites here. They are getting healthy at the right time for them with getting Millsap back. He came in and played low 20s minutes. Looked pretty good, just for considering how long he had been out. They're 6.5-point favorites in a low spread game. Memphis going the other way. I gave them a pretty high tanking grade just because they had run their starters. They're one of those, we're bad enough to just lose on our own, so don't worry about us. We'll just play Andrew Harrison a bunch of point guard minutes, and we'll play Jarrell Martin a bunch of minutes, and Jamichael Green can play. Where do we stand here on these Memphis guys? The news, the relevant news is Wayne Selden is questionable. And then the typical suspects like Chandler Parsons and Tyreek Evans have already been ruled out. Andrew Harrison is also questionable too. So that would actually likely change things. If both Selden and Harrison were both ruled out, I think we'd be in a Mario Chalmers everywhere kind of situation. Do you feel that way about Memphis? Is it too early to tell about who some of the plays are going to be here just because of the injury news? And then you can talk a little bit about Denver.
No, I think it's probably still a little bit too early to weigh in, simply because, there's just so much influx with this Memphis team. Like, they might just pull a guard and put a power forward in there in the starting lineup. Like, you just don't know what they're going to be up to on any given night. That being said, like, Denver, still as good a matchup for DFS purposes as ever. I mean, the bad average in terms of pace this year, so that's a little bit of a downgrade for them, but bottom four team in terms of defensive efficiency this year. So they're really getting beat up, and the names that are down there with them are not the names that you'd hope to be equated with, right? Like Sacramento, Phoenix, Orlando, and so forth. So Denver definitely represents a really solid matchup here. One issue with playing Memphis guys against them is Denver's actually kind of good too. So they are 8-point favorites. Again, bad teams tend to have those happy trigger fingers. 8-point favorites is not necessarily something that we get too overly concerned about, but it's certainly worth pointing out. The other thing about these Memphis guys, from Martin to Jamichael Green, even Marc Gasol, all of them are a lot more expensive than they were even in the last game that we played them against Phoenix. You're seeing an $800 price increase for Green. I think it's almost it's a full $1,100 on Jarrell Martin. So yeah, you're definitely paying for it right now. And I'm not sure that I would have been as enthusiastic about these plays had these prices been as high against Phoenix, which is an even better matchup. And I'm not sure if I'll be super thrilled about playing certainly the big men in cash tonight, but I will be monitoring that point guard situation because we've seen that basically whoever steps into that starting point guard role tends to do something with it, even if it's just chip in a few assists. So if Harrison were to miss with that wrist injury, then I think Chalmers would be a very, very solid.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't realize that Denver's defensive efficiency was bad. It makes sense. They have a huge liability in Jokic and
Jamal Murray.
Jamal Murray. They have one very good defender in Harris, and that's kind of it for that starting lineup. So getting Millsap back does help them there, though. And Denver going the other way, it's not, this is still, Memphis is bad, but they're still really slow. So not really, and Denver has been one of those teams in the short term that has played very tight rotations around their starters, meaning the prices have just not skyrocketed, but slowly crept up to tough, even in good matchups to play them. And that's guys like Barton and Jokic. They're just getting very, very expensive as they realize that these are just the guys we want to play. Other 8 o'clock game, Toronto goes in and plays Washington. Only real injury news here is OG Anunoby is going to sit. It kind of doesn't matter. Like, he wasn't really playing a ton anyway. He started, but he was kind of a 18-minute a game starter kind of guy. So I don't think the news on him being out really moves the needle at all. This is Toronto, we've talked about in the past, is a very bad matchup when you're playing them in DFS. They're excellent on defense. And they're also just kind of the worst of all worlds because they're excellent on defense. So it's hard to play teams against them. And it's hard to play their guys because they play such long rotations with the bench guys seeing tons of minutes. Like, the bench guys played a ton the other day also. Poeltl played a ton. Siakam. Seemed like Siakam took maybe some of Anunoby's minutes, but it's so hard to tell with this team. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I think Toronto, it's kind of just a tragedy, the commons there. They've spread the minutes out. And I think, we've seen this actually with a few different good teams this year. And I think it just makes perfect sense. It kind of reminds me of how most good NBA or NFL teams have moved to a running back by committee. And that's because a lot of times your parts are sort of interchangeable. And if you're just trying to keep people rested and make sure that everyone's feeling, healthy when it really matters, or your very, very best. Like, if you think, I don't know, in the case of the NFL, that I can't even think of any examples. My NFL brain is all broken here, but say in this case, you think Pascal Siakam is 2% better than OG Anunoby or whatever, right? Like when you get to the playoffs, that matters. You're going to go for every last little edge that you can possibly find. When you're in the regular season, you can kind of mix and match and kind of play through whatever. That's why we see rotations for all teams get shorter. And I think that we'll see that even more dramatically with the good teams this year. Unfortunately, for DFS purposes, that makes a lot of these guys pretty unappealing. I think if we thought there was any reason that Siakam were going to play more minutes, I mean, the guy's been paying value on 22, 23 minutes a game on a $4,800 price tag. But and that makes him one of those really, really attractive punts if new opportunity were to become available. But I think in his current role, he's an odd man looking in for me. Like, I'd be pretty hard pressed to play any backup at 4,800 who's just going to play 24 minutes a game.
Yeah, but and just back to those rotations, that you see from the best coach teams will do this. They'll just give these guys opportunity.
Yeah, that's what
they'll
I mean.
Give these guys opportunity because you just never know when you're going to need them too, right? Like, and so we've seen this with the Spurs year in and year out. It's like, oh, every year, you know, Pop turns this totally no-name person into a good NBA rotational player. Well, it's just not coincidence. They just give them lots of opportunities. Some teams do that, and some good teams. They try to do that and they are successful with it because their coach is good. Like and Toronto strikes me as taking a page out of that book right now. They're just like, okay, let's just give all these guys opportunity on the chance that we're going to need them down the line. They're not just going to be thrown into the fire. So
now, exactly. And for on those good teams, it really is like a people look at someone, they might be like, oh, Davis Bertans better than I thought. But that's kind of like you're looking at the symptoms of something rather than a cause, right? So it's like, Davis Bertans doesn't probably cause the Spurs to be way better because he's out there. He's good because that's a symptom of the Spurs' excellent game planning, right? And so, you know, you see guys like George Hill. People are like, George Hill is going to be the next great point guard in the league. Well, when he was on the Spurs, you know, people are like, paying him big contracts and trying to get him to fit in elsewhere. It's like, it just turns out that being on the Spurs right. makes you look really good because it's easier to play basketball with other good players when everyone's on the same page than it is to play in Sacramento, right? So, yeah, I'm with you. And I think it's smart. But yeah, again, for DFS purposes, it's a very long way of saying, are you going to play any of these Toronto guys today?
No. So moving on. Last 8 o'clock game, Indiana goes in and plays Milwaukee. I still have a very leftover just deep hurt, regret, sadness over what happened with Giannis the other night, because it's pretty rare to be able to play a player low owned in cash. And
yeah,
7%. And also, and when I saw the 7%, I was so pumped because I was like, oh my God, this is great. Like I can't like that. We're getting such a value on him. Cause I thought he was just the best, one of the best big money payoffs. So I
really, were you aware at the time though, that he was going to have his worst DFS game of the season, including the All-Star game and 25 points worse than any of his other regular DFS games.
I did not know. And I really tried to not let that stuff affect me because I understand that these things will just happen, right? Like your guy will get hurt. Like a player can just have a bad game on the time you rostered him. It's like, and one thing that drives me crazy, and I'm sorry if a person is listening that says this in chat, is when it says, so-and-so always burns me. I'm like, well, it doesn't do anything to you personally, right? Like you just chose to roster that person either in a good situation and it didn't work out or in a bad situation, but it's not burning you.
It's not like you guys were supposed to meet for dinner and he didn't show up,
like
he, right?
It's not like he checked. It's not like he logged into your FanDuel account and saw that he was on your roster tonight and it was like, time to screw over.
Got him.
I don't know. Maybe it's just the verbiage that kind of just drives me a little batty. But with Giannis tonight, he did leave the game early. So he's right now he is questionable to play. Oh, no, I guess it just got worked up to probable. It was an eye thing. So he had left the game early, mostly because the game was kind of over at that point, and I just didn't need him to come back in. He's going to play tonight. And he has a good matchup. Sure. I still think, you know, Milwaukee is still very much motivated to win. Giannis is he's among, if not the very best, one of the very best fantasy guys, obviously, in the league. And he's been incredibly consistent this year. Like his coefficient of variation, he and Russell Westbrook sort of live in a territory all their own in terms of game by game consistency over the course of the season. That number is not completely perfect because certain players' roles have changed. Like LeBron's recent role has just changed in this team now. So like his consistency rating, right. if you filtered it out by date, it's probably going to be a little bit different. And honestly, Giannis's probably is too, as like Bledsoe got into the picture and whatever. So that number is not completely perfect, but it does speak to a level of consistency that you don't typically see from these kind of price players. We have him as projected only under Westbrook today in terms of overall fantasy points. And he's coming 1,700 less on DraftKings and somewhere in that same range on FanDuel. Would you be okay going back to the Giannis well here, knowing that he screwed you over specifically the other night?
He did do that. He's 700 less than Westbrook on FanDuel. I'm maybe 900.
Yeah.
not sure that's enough of a savings for me to draw me away from Westbrook. Westbrook having the league best matchup against Phoenix. Obviously, there's some blowout risk there. But I'll be honest. I mean, I am a little bit concerned about Giannis. I think when you look over the course of the whole season, the consistency overall is there. I do think when a role changes like this, it's worth keying in on. And, you know, I'm looking since the new year, for instance, we got a 4-game stretch where his highest fantasy total was 37 points. Then, you know, another bit of a little bit of a good stretch there. And then we're now in this kind of up and down phase where it's 73 fantasy points one night, 14 the next night. I wonder if with more effective players in Milwaukee, if we'll see this becoming more of a trend for Giannis, where when the matchup's good, when he has a situation he can really capitalize on, he really goes hard and goes after it. And then, you know, when it's not looking as good or for whatever reason the team gets away from him, they're actually in a position where they can do that. Because it used to be that no matter what was happening in Milwaukee, Giannis had to have the ball in his hands because he was the only guy who could dribble the ball up and down the court besides like Malcolm Brogdon, right? So like he happened to hold the ball a lot. With Bledsoe there, now it's a lot more natural, I think, for Giannis to defer more frequently. And just like minutes being a huge deal, if you lose a minute here and there, deferring on, you know, even 20% of the possessions of a given game, when you're normally a guy who can get 7-8 assists a game, that does really add up. So, you know, I'm not sure I'm totally excited about playing Giannis tonight. That being said, it is an excellent matchup too. So if there are matchups where he's really going to go ham and get in there and score a lot of fantasy points, this certainly could be one of them.
So for what it's worth, you know, for the way we formulate the projections in our system is we do account for these kind of changes in teams. So right now we have Giannis as getting a 3% usage downgrade and a 2% rebounding downgrade. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. Like we don't really see these 3% and 4% kind of decreases or increases for situations just because of the way that we work the math and sort of regress some of the numbers. But that does represent, I would say, a sizable tick down relative to what we do with some other players. So we have that accounted in there. It might not be enough. Like, I don't really know. Like, I don't know if that's just not accounting for it enough and he does deserve more of a downgrade. Maybe he's just been more inconsistent. Maybe it's just too fresh on like my frontal lobe because I'm just staring at that 16 point game and knowing that he was in every single one of my lineups that night. But, that's kind of, I'm a little bit, just a little bit freaked out by Giannis at this point. He's not a guy coming into any lineups right now either. So I'm not sure. I take that back. He's in a lot of DraftKings lineups. It is worth noting, he's significantly cheaper than Westbrook on DraftKings.
Yeah, the price difference still makes a huge difference on DraftKings, of course. Just like a 3% usage downgrade means something. $1,700 on DraftKings is a fortune. So if you can get him cheaper, I still think, you know, at his core, I wouldn't be shocked if he were a 50 fantasy point per game player. It's just a question, do you want to go 11 plus on a 10 game slate on FanDuel? That's really going to be the question I'm asking myself tonight.
Well, I know that you're going to be in charge of the system tonight. When he's in all the DraftKings lineups, you're going to get some, not people that probably don't want to do it, but whatever. I would be fine with it. I think if I knew he was going to play, and I think the matchup is a fine enough one. Oklahoma City goes in and plays Phoenix. They're eight point favorites on the road here. Phoenix has played very tough recently. Then they're still losing. They're doing exactly what we want. They're losing games,
God's work,
but also playing their guys just millions of minutes. They said they were going to do it, and they are sticking to it, and I'm proud of them. So a slow clap for them. They, you know, after years and years of tanking on purpose, they just said, we'll just go for it, whatever. If our odds change a little bit, maybe we'll get some good faith, or we'll get some of these young players. We'll actually see what these young guys can do.
Sure.
8 points is not really in a zone of blowouts. And like I said, I'm encouraged by the energy with which the Suns have played. Where do you think we see Westbrook's ownership tonight? Right now, he is not a guy coming into really many lineups when we run things right now. Not to say that won't be the case later on. His ownership at 11.9 on FanDuel and then somewhere the same range on DraftKings. Where do you see his ownership, and do you think we'll be on the right or wrong side of a possible fade here with Westbrook?
I think I'll probably want to play Westbrook tonight. I recognize that there is like some discomfort at this price point. The role has sort of been coming and going this season. I just think Phoenix, man, it's just really, really hard to exaggerate what a good matchup this is. I mean, they're coming up on being a historically good DFS matchup right now. So right now they are the worst overall defensive efficiency in the team. And they're just 0.7 pace behind the Lakers for the fastest team in the league. So that means that right now, you're getting almost the most possessions per game, and each of those possessions is worth more fantasy points per minute than a possession against any other team in the NBA, right? So that's really, really something, especially for a breakneck sort of player like Westbrook, who really thrives in chaos and can do a lot in a lot of different facets of the game. So I'd be really excited to play Westbrook tonight. I suppose I could understand it if we wind up, you know, sort of middling out But yeah, I, especially looking at some of the other big money payoffs tonight, I think he's the one I'm most excited about. Then again, I could see something happening where we just go with, you know, maybe not these elite 11K plus payoffs, and we do something like, you know, maybe like the Detroit guys against Orlando. You know, there's other directions you can go here, I think, pretty credibly. But yeah, it'd be nice to see his name on top of the lineup.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think his ownership is probably going to be in cash games, going to be on FanDuel 55% plus would be my guess, somewhere in that long. In that,
I love you. Go exact, man. It's from your Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. That's where I do all kinds of predictions, not just this silly sports one. I think that the ownership is probably going to be in that range. You know, like you mentioned, right now, our lineups are defaulting to this, because we've mentioned a lot of these middle tier guys as very good values, like Blake and Kemba Walker, Dwight Howard, these guys that are all in the 7,000-ish range. Williams, we haven't talked about yet, but he's another one. When you have enough of these 7,000, 8,000 guys in really good spots, you are going to default a little bit to, like you said, a middling out approach. It'll be interesting to see sort of what happens as we get closer to lock. Outside of him, I'm not really totally pumped about some of the prices on the rest of the OKC guys. Maybe Steven Adams, he's getting a little bit expensive. And then Phoenix, though, Booker playing close to 40 minutes, Elfrid Payton playing high 30s minutes, getting a little bit expensive. And then we have a TJ Warren injury news where he is questionable to play right now with that tailbone bruise. Again, Bruce's bum. So he is questionable. I will say about Phoenix, they've been excellent about injury reporting this season. They have been early almost every time with this news, unless I think it's a really close decision. So Phoenix.
I like that the most excited you get about organizations, just by the way, is how good they are at reporting their injury news. Just like you sound a little bit breathless, just like a little bit like you just met somebody new that you want to tell me about. It's like so
well,
fun.
It's true, though. I mean, when you spend
excellence about reporting your injury news.
When you spend as much time as I do thinking about this stuff, like this kind of stuff does matter. It's silly, but I'm glad you recognize it, though. No, they're very good about it. And I think that we'll have word one way or the other. It doesn't look like Tyson Chandler is going to play again. Alex Len's minutes haven't really materialized. I guess the question here is the matchup just not good enough? OKC is a very good defensive team. Do you think we've seen the prices increase on this new opportunity for Phoenix enough that when they play a team like OKC, we really can't go down that road?
I think you'll see a lot of Josh Jackson ownership tonight if he winds up getting the start again, or if Warren winds up being doubtful or out by the time lineup lock comes around. He was just so good. He played 40 minutes. He was a 68% start and just was totally insane, paid 10x on his price in his last game. So I think even in a very tough matchup, you'll see a lot of play there. I'm not sure how I totally feel about it, because Jackson actually, he came through in our optimal lineups on FanDuel, but it wasn't like a slam dunk sort of situation. And I think you're looking pretty optimistic if you think he's going to score 50 fantasy points a game. I'll put it that way. So yeah, going up against Oklahoma City with a $900 price increase and, you know, a team that plays a top seven defense in the league with a bottom 10 pace, that doesn't sound too appealing to me, you know, and some additional blowout risk than there was in the Memphis game as well, too. So Jackson's the only guy I can think about playing tonight, I think, on the Phoenix side. And even he, I would give a little bit of pause and just want to make sure I consider by their options, too.
Yep, I agree. And I think we'll wait during this day for my favorite injury reporting team of all time, the Suns. So you do your thing, Suns. Love you guys. Knicks go in and play the Clippers. Clippers -9 favorites. They are the news and notes for injury wise here. Danilo Gallinari is still out. Tyrone Wallace is questionable right now, and it's unclear about whether he's going to play because he's on a two-way contract, so I'm not sure if they're going to bring him back.
That was like such a shocker for people when his contract wasn't renewed for last game.
So that's really the only and Avery Bradley still remains out. That's really the news on the Clippers here. The Knicks are a pretty good matchup because they're really bad. We mentioned them as one of the tanking teams. They came to the party really late because of the Porzingis thing, and they probably are not going to get all the way there because they just won too many games prior to the injury. So I don't know, bad on them, but way to run bad. But they're trying their best. They're doing the sort of unapologetic tanking thing here too. Like they start Courtney Lee, they play him 15 minutes. They start Enes Kanter, they'll play him less than 20 minutes. My question for you is Trey Burke. So Trey Burke has been coming off the bench.
Okay, that's not a question so far, but continue.
It's going to be a question. It's mostly just going to be a statement, then you can respond to it. So whatever about just getting about the semantics about what kind of statement it is.
Want to be on the same page.
So he's played 29 minutes, 26 minutes, 24 minutes. He's been completely amazing, like 44 fantasy points against Orlando, 40 against Boston, and then 32, let's round it up to say, against Golden State. I I've not rostered him yet because I've always thought the game before was the outlier, and that hasn't been the case. Now, he has been a pretty chalky play over the last couple games, especially after that second game. And being on the outside looking in, guys like this is sometimes very difficult. And I still think like it's insane to play the guy, and he's still like in our top system. Like, I don't know what to make of him. What do you make? Here's my final question. What do you make of Trey Burke?
Yeah, I'm not excited about playing Trey Burke at an all-time high price in a, you know, it's actually a fine matchup, of course. But yeah, it's $5,500 for a guy who probably is going to play 26 minutes a game. And I really want to be really confident that you're looking at a tried and true sort of fantasy point per minute producer on those prices. And, you know, Trey Burke historically throughout his career hasn't been that. Now, he's looked better this season. I'll say, like, you know, with the Knicks, when he's on the court, like, he's not shy about having the ball in his hands, distributing, shooting a ton. I mean, the fact that he, just in terms of regular points from the field, 26 points against Orlando, 26 against Boston in 26 minutes, 18 against Golden State in 28 minutes. Guy's getting balls in the air, so that's certainly a really welcome sign. I guess the question you have to ask yourself, and this is always, I guess, the devil in the details, is are we looking at minutes upside for Burke? Like, are the Knicks talking to themselves internally and being like, geez, we got to leave this guy out there for more minutes. He's at least exciting. Or is it more like, Trey's been kind of a fun fill-in for a few games, and then we'll send him back to 12 minutes a game. That's really the answer for me in terms of whether we can consider playing Burke in the long term. And right now, I'm just not sure. Like, I don't know. It's just going to be really hard for me to want to pull the trigger on a guy at this price point with this kind of track record.
Well, he was a guy, when I saw his ownership on DraftKings the other night, it was like 65%. That was like the opposite of, well, I was like, good. I said the same thing I said when I saw Giannis's low ownership. I was like, good. This is just the wrong kind of guy to play. Like, this is the trap you can fall into. Now, he ended up being good, of course. So I was wrong about just about everything that night. But it's just one of those, he feels like, you know, people sometimes use the word trap, and I think they use it incorrectly, or they use it as a different definition of what I think the word trap means. Sometimes people use the word trap to mean something didn't work out, right? And so, like, that's not a trap. Like, if all the signs pointed to something being a good decision and it didn't work out, it can just be bad luck, or, you know, a little bit of variance, or maybe your inputs were incorrect, but you didn't get trapped by it. Now, Burke actually...
That would be like trusting like Aaron Gordon's 3-point percentage early in the season or something, right? Where it's like kind of comes out of nowhere, and then you're like, yeah, I believe, like, let's do it.
Well, that's
based on this very small sample size.
That's what I think we have with Burke here. We have a very small sample size. Now, when he gets on the court, he just does... He has a 28 usage. His shot, and that usage is even higher in the short term here. Like, he's putting up a million shots. He's putting up like 0.75 shots a minute or something like that. Like, that also seems unsustainable to me. And this is the guy that strikes me strictly as a trap. Like, I don't think it's a good idea to play him. And I am prepared to be staring at him as another chalk play again, at only 5,100 on DraftKings. He's in the 5,000s on FanDuel. He's coming in all our lineups right now because we're drawing too much on his recent performance. So I think that's going to be, we're going to have a downward guidance on that. But
career 40% shooter this season, 54%.
Right. He's just not a different. This is a guy that's been cut by three teams. Like, he's just not effectively cut. Like, cut by the Jazz, 100% cut by the Wizards, and then and brought on by the Knicks. So he's just not Russell Westbrook light. I really want to caution people against that. And I can understand.
I think that's fair to say, Doug. I think that's firm, but fair. I also agree. He's not Russell Westbrook.
On the Clipper side, Lou Williams is a guy that's showing up in a lot of lineups for us right now. Looks like, you know, obviously they're going to be without those two wing guys in Gallo and Bradley. And we said Wallace is probably going to be back tonight. Williams is one of these other guys who is one of the reasons we're not seeing a lot of Westbrook. Like, he's one of those higher mid-range guys that the lineups are being populated by, rather than just going up, you know, stars and scrubs sort of approach. Do you trust that with a guy like Williams here tonight in this matchup? Are you a little bit worried about the blowout? The Knicks really stink. So, I mean, Clippers are almost 10-point favorites here. What are your thoughts on Lou Will or anyone else from the Clippers?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to get a pulse on why Lou Will went out and just only shot 11 times last game. Like, that's the thing I'm kind of concerned about. For him to play his full run of minutes 35 times, or his full run of minutes 35, and only shoot 11 times, that's a little bit concerning, but it strikes me as kind of a short-term aberration rather than anything indicative of a long-term trend. His fewest shots in the six games prior was 16, so you figure getting a 50% shot decrease is going to make anyone's line look a little bit worse come the end. His overall involvement in the game was just kind of down as well, like fewer assists, fewer rebounds, fewer defensive stats than we're used to. Like, it was just one of those down games across the board. Now, was that because Houston kind of defended him tough, or was it because of something that's more indicative of a long-term trend? I'm not totally sure there, to be honest. You know, we have seen some wobbling around in terms of the point guard situation in LA. And I don't know if that, you know, wound up getting Williams the ball in his hands a little bit less. It's just kind of tough to say. But overall, though, I think trusting the prior track record, that 17, 18 shots a game probably is a little bit more reliable baseline. Knicks are a great matchup, as you mentioned. And obviously, like, you know, Vegas isn't going to be concerned about how the Clippers are going to perform against the Knicks. In fact, it goes the other way. They actually worry that the Clippers are going to blow the Knicks out. I think if they do, Lou Williams is featured prominently. And for that reason, I wouldn't mind playing him in cash. I don't know that I want to prioritize him over Westbrook, though.
Yeah, and again, that's not a binary decision because of price. Like, you're making probably two other decisions along the way. Yeah, so it's not just Lou Williams for West. I know you understand that. I just want to make sure other people understand that.
I understand.
You're making other decisions. You have to kind of, you know, what's the payoff you're getting elsewhere? And it's not strictly like Lou Williams or bust tonight. He falls into that example of guys that I'm kind of staring at tonight and wondering if this is going to be the overall roster makeup on a night like tonight, and if this is really the way. Like, if we're going to be really contrarian with this kind of lineup construction, I could see that being the case. Let's finish off here. Minnesota, Utah. I'm not sure how much there is to talk about this game. Very slow matchup. Two pretty good defenses. Minnesota's priced all pretty correctly. Sort of the same with Utah. Doesn't feel like a game that I'm going to have really any exposure to outside of maybe just some late slate two game stuff. Do you kind of feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota, we've talked about ad nauseum. They're a team that plays very reliable minutes, playable in great matchups, not playable in bad ones. You're not going to play them here. Utah going the other way. They actually just have a lot of like weird minutes things that they get up to in such a way that doesn't always necessarily create value. And Minnesota, just not a very good team to go up against. They've been kind of rough on the defensive end overall, but still playing that bottom seven pace makes them roughly a league average matchup. So given that Utah is sort of unexciting from a DFS perspective, I'd be surprised if we wanted to run them out here.
All right, we're going to get out of here. Pretty nice. I went in unenthusiastic, and I maybe have changed my mind a little bit about...
Well, ever since you started thinking about the Suns and their injury reporting, I've noticed a distinct change in your demeanor that you can check out by going to twitch.tv/DFSR podcast, and you can see Doug just positively glowing. Doug, it's so nice to see you that way.
I just like when people do their jobs well. We're from DFSR.com. DFSR.com/NBA gets you that free 3-day trial. So go check that out as well. We'll be back again next Tuesday for more podcasts, NBA podcasts. Please go over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast. It really helps us get more listens. I know people, you hear that from a lot of podcasts you listen to, and it really is true. It's one of the best things that you can do to help out a podcast is go to iTunes, rate and review it. 5 stars, preferably. Any review will do. But really, if you're not going to do 5 stars, don't bother. But so anyway, iTunes, go over and rate and review the podcast.
Also, screw you if you're not going to do 5 stars, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. Like, it's either 5 stars or just don't give it. 5 stars are boss. All right, dfsr.com/NBA.
Yeah.
Back again next Tuesday, buddy. Didn't get to see your face on Twitch, but I hope everyone else enjoyed looking at you. We'll talk to you later.
Or you'll go catch it out when you go get it. And yeah, we'll do it. We'll be putting something up on the website live so you can watch it right from our site, dfsr.com, or you can go to twitch.tv/dfsrpodcast.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later.
Peace.